Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know if you can see the changes that have come over me in these last few days. I've been afraid that I might drift away. I've been telling old stories, singing songs that make me think about where I came from. That's the reasons why I seem so far away today. Oh, and let me tell you that I love you, that I think about you all the time. Caledonia, you're calling. Now I'm going home. If I should become a stranger, you know that it would make me more than sad. Caledonia's been everything I've ever had. Oh, and I have moved and I've kept on moving. I've proved the points that I needed proving. Lost the friends that I needed losing, found others on the way. Oh, and I have tried, and I've kept on trying. I've stolen dreams, yes, there's no denying. I have traveled hard, with conscience flying, somewhere with the wind. Oh, well, let me tell you that I love you, that I think about you all the time. Caledonia, you're calling me. Now I'm going home. If I should become a stranger, you know that it would make me more than sad. Caledonia's been everything I've ever. Sitting here before the fire, the empty room, the forest choir, the flames that couldn't get any higher, well, they were withered now, they've gone. But I'm steady thinking, my way is clear, and I know what I will do tomorrow. When the hands are shaken and the kisses flow, well, I will disappear. Oh, and let me tell you that I love you, that I think about you all the time. Caledonia, you're calling me. Now I'm going home. If I should become a stranger, you know that it would make me more than sad. Everything I've ever had.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters and the Twisted Mister or Two. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I hope you're having a wonderful week. I know it's only Tuesday, but I hope you have a much better week ahead as well. Hey, Pam, how are you tonight?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
If I was any better, I would be twins. We all know how
awesome
that is.
Awesome. Oh, yes.
Hey, we got a couple folks with us, so I picked them up already. First off, I'm going to do this in order they called in, so I can't be biased. Next phone call was from Rex. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
Hey, Rex. All right.
Good evening.
Very good.
Glad you could join us.
Yep, yep. And next, and never least, we have Miss Naomi. Hey, Naomi.
Hello. How are you?
Three sisters and a wanted for. How you feeling?
Hey, Naomi.
Hello. Better,
how
better,
you
better.
Better, Naomi?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just coughing a little bit again, but
yes.
Over the cold, pretty much.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. Okay, so I'm going to go like this. Hey, Pam, what's your theme for tonight? Tell us all about it.
Well, tonight is Burns Night. It's the birthday and celebration of poet Robert Burns. Robert Burns is pretty well known. In fact, one of the interesting little facts about him is when it comes to memorial statues around the world, he is the third most non-religious figure put up behind Queen Victoria and Christopher Columbus.
There you go.
Yeah. The man was obviously well known for, and he's the only poet who has a national day celebrated around the world. He was also quite the ladies' man. He wrote thousands of lines of poetry dedicated to women, and fathered 12 children, 9 with his wife.
He got around.
He sure did. He sure did. A lot of his
that was
poetry.
That well-used haggis.
Yes, yes, and we are with Burns Night, as Rex said. Traditionally, haggis is eaten, but I couldn't find any haggis for us all to share. So, you know, but he was very. Very fond of his haggis and very fond of his whiskey.
And his women.
And his women, yes. Another interest, now he was known as a proto or a pre-romanticism era poet. Like, it's believed that his poetry was the poetry that influenced and kicked off the romanticism era of poetry. And one more interesting fact, at one point, his body was dug up, his skeleton was dug up, his skull was measured, and he was found to have a bigger than average skull.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting. I'm not
saying
nothing else.
Well, I have to say, I am really looking forward to tonight's poetry. I'm glad to have you all here with me. I just think, he's a very, no matter what you think of his poetry or of his ability to father so many children with different women, he definitely was very influential throughout history and only lived to the age of 37.
Right. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. But this is going to be a fun night tonight. I'm looking forward to the reading and the commenting and just, it's going to be very cool. And so I guess we'll go ahead and get ready or get started. And all right, so every Burns Night dinner is started out with two readings. First, the Selkirk Grace, and then Address to a Haggis. I'll read Selkirk Grace, skip comments on that, and then so after I'm done with that read, Rex will read Address to a Haggis, and that one I'll start the commenting on. So with that being said, do we have anybody else on the phone before I continue on?
No.
All right. Well, then, here we go in a Scottish accent, Pam. I don't know. I don't want to offend any non-Scottish people, but I'll try. I'll try rolling my R's. This is the Selkirk Grace. Some ha meat and cannot eat, and some what eat that want it. But we ha meat and we can eat. See, let the Lord be thanked. And grace.
Wow, great accent here, Pat.
Thank you. Okay, and now, Rex, it's your turn to read Address to a Haggis.
All right. Address to a Haggis by Robert Burns. Care for your honest son, care for your honest son, sea space. Great chieftain o' the pudding race, a boon them are ye take your place, pinch tripe or fairm, weel are ye worthy of a grace as lands me arm. The groaning trencher there ye fill, your hurdies like a distant hill, your pin what helped to mend the mill in time of need, while through your pores the dews distill like amber bead. His knife see rustic labor dodge, and cut ye up with ready slight, trenching your gushing entrails bright like Oney ditch. And then, oh, what a glorious sight, warm, reeking, rich. Then, horn for horn, they stretch and strive. They'll take hindmost on they drive. Till at their wheel swall kites be live and bent like drums. Then all geedmen mayest like to rise. Be thanked, hums. Is there that o'er his French rag owl, or olio that wants store a sow, or fricassee what make or stew with perfect scorner, looks down with sneering, scornful view on sick a dinner? Poor devil, see him o'er his trash, as speckless as a withered rash, his spindle shank a dyed whiplash, his knave a nit, through bloody flood or field to dash, oh, how unfit. But mark the rustic haggis fed, the trembling earth resounds his tread, clap his wailing knave a blade, he'll make it whistle, and legs and arms and eds will smed like caps of thistle. Ye powers will make mankind your care, and dish them out their bill of fare when one's nail stinking ware that drops and luggies. But if ye wish your grateful prayer, you're a haggis. And fun. Well, that was rough.
Bravo, Rex. That was an awesome read. Thank you so much. And Naomi, let's start with you for comments. What did you think of this classic poem?
Well, I understood French ragout. I'm just reading here. It's all about food, eh? And his haggis. And, it's the way it's written, it's really neat. Yeah. But I didn't understand all of it though, but it's really neat. And your accent on the first poem, Pam, wow, that was really cool.
Well, I only had to hold it for four lines. Thank you. they actually do have this translated into more modern-day English rather than the Scottish dialect. But I wanted to go with the more authentic version of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and you're right. It does sound really cool when it's read, I have to agree.
Yeah.
And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, you got like an haggis now, don't you? Well, and if you knew what was in it, you wouldn't like it very much.
What is it?
Oh, you don't want to know. You can look it up and you'll be amazed and say, oh, God, no, I'm not going anywhere near that thing. But it is a traditional dish, and it comes from the poor angle of using everything that is given to you from the animal to make a meal that is clearly of one origin only.
Yeah, it's the sheep's stomach stuffed with a bunch of other parts of the sheep. Plus,
okay.
I think, like, some torn-up bread and some seasoning and whatever else you can find. It's,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. But, Phil, what did you think of this classic poem?
She always forgets my name. Pay attention, guys. Every time she comes to me, she hems and haws about who the hell I am. I'm starting to figure
out. Well, you know what
it
is because I don't forget your name. It's that I go back and forth between Phil and Jean, and I end up saying, well, I'm trying to think of which one to use.
Meeny, meeny, miny, moe. Listen, what I heard in the poem I thought was really good. There were bits and pieces where it got a little bit too curly-cued for me. Nothing personal, Rex. It really wasn't you. It was just in general. But I was trying to find the words. Where the hell are the words, Pam? Is it me?
They're in the poem. Oh, they got buried by conversation.
I don't know. I went looking. The first one I found was a little tiny short thing. I don't know. Anyway, I couldn't read it.
Oh, I posted them both together. Sorry.
That's okay. I looked. I couldn't find it, but it's all right. I just was confused, and I'm like, oh, where is it? But, yeah, but it sounded really good. And, it, you know, like Robert Burns gives a darn what I think, you know? But stuff. And anybody who, you know, wants to do like an ode to a haggis or, you know, a night with the haggis, hey, more power to them.
Oh, absolutely.
That ain't how
it got to
it, so. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Anyway, good job. Nice intro, Pam. Nice read, Rex.
I have to get Rooster on here and see if he eats any haggis.
Well, I don't know if the Irish eat haggis.
Yeah, it's true.
They
it's
might.
From
they
Scotland, eh?
Oh, Rooster? No, he's from Ireland.
Yeah, he's from Ireland, not Scotland. It's true. Yeah.
Yep. But I really thought this was fun. That's one of the great things about Robert Burns' poetry, besides the fact that he wrote not only in the Scottish dialect, but he also wrote in English and then also Gaelic. He has relatable poetry that goes anywhere from the absurd, like this, to satire, to obviously romantic, since he had thousands of lines dedicated to women. And I'm pretty sure that this poem here, there is not a single line dedicated to a woman. So I could be wrong.
No, scroll down to the bottom. You'll see the translation.
Yes. I found it.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yes, it's
yeah.
all
yep.
about the making of and the enjoyment of an haggis.
Well, you can bet there's a woman involved somewhere.
She's the one making the haggis.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And the butchering.
Oh, yes. Yes. But, I thought, Rex, you did a wonderful read of this, and I thought it was just a great way to start out the night. All right, and let's go ahead and see what we got next. All right, up next we have All Gone Too Soon by Sam Sampson. And Naomi, will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, All Gone Too Soon. Nay, man can tether time or tide. Time shifts, a blink, a mote. I remember 10 years old, blanket forts give away, a lap to lap blankets in the dark, I remember 14, a new school gives way to old school wisdom. I remember 31, last of my kids, birth gives way to grandchildren running ripe fields. I remember 45, old knees give way to titanium and plastic. I remember 52, black hair gives way to frost on my temples. I remember yesterday giving way to tomorrow. Flash of lightning, single raindrop, a spark from the fire, a lover's kiss, all gone too soon. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Naomi. And Sam was inspired by Nay Man, Can Tether Time or Tide. And Rex, let's start with you for comments.
Well, it's a nice roll from early years through age, but that center section kind of gives a different turn of thought. Last my kid's birth gives way at 31, but by 45, they've broken him up so badly that he needs titanium and plastic to fix his knees and his hips. That's a hard bunch of kids. And then everything else rolls from there. You know, gray hair giving way to temples, and yesterday giving way to tomorrow. But the thought and the last hits on the thing, everything's gone too soon because of everything that rolls in between. In the blink of an eye, all is gone from 10 to 50, and you don't even know it.
That is so true, and you're right, it does. I mean, especially it seems as like the older you get and the more your kids grow, the more, you know, time just passes, as you said, in a blink of an eye. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, he goes back, and he says, how time, I love the repetition of giving away, how it emphasizes all that what time gives us, you know, some good, some bad, but it goes so fast, you know, it just goes in the fleeting, you know, and just disappears, and it just, you know, like you said, in a blink of an eye, it's gone. So you have to appreciate it while it's here. But he's, you know, like he says, a lover's kiss, all gone too soon. Now, this is a fantastic write, you know. Love this little write by Sam Sampson here. I think he captured that prompt so wonderfully.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, you are right. I have to agree with you that the repetitiveness adds to the strength of the poem and adds to how, like, having the words I remember repeat themselves over and over again adds to how well he did capture that prompt. And I like that he takes us through that life from 10 years old up to current times and takes us to the change that happened in life. I really particularly like to grandchildren running ripe fields. And also the opening line, time shifts, a blink, a moat. And, you know, just a wonderful way to start off that poem to remind us of how each section of life is just really just a blink, a small particle of the whole picture. So I thought this was very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
I really like this piece a lot. I think that Sam did an excellent job with it. I love to walk through the stages of his life and the different points that he made. You know, and I like how he broke into this poem, but I love the ending of this. I remember yesterday giving way to tomorrow, a flashing of lightning, a single raindrop, a spark from the fire, a lover's kiss, all gone too soon. You know, it's like, you know, when you start looking at the years as they go by, you know, there's just more behind you than there is in front of you. And all those things have just happened way too quickly, you know. And so it was really, really nicely done. An excellent take on the prompt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well said there, and great comments, everybody. All right. And up next, we have Getting Up from the Uneasy Chair by Ken Smith. And Jean, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. Getting Up from the Uneasy Chair by Ken Smith. I placed the extension ladder against the roof, pulled on the rope that rolled through the pulleys, but I had a ladder. I had the ladder upside down and dropped instead, step by step, and descended into low society, which is high society, to find myself a social climber, rising downward instead of into modesty, just modesty, honesty, and poem.
Great,
oh, well.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
yep.
And very cool. Yeah, I liked this one. I thought it was quite clever. And he wrote to the prompt, dare to be honest and fear no labor. And Naomi, let's hear your thoughts first.
Yeah, well, I love that he took the metaphor of the ladder because it's often associated with, you know, working. With the working class and, you know, the blue collars and, you know, construction workers or you know, les pompiers, what's that? Les pompiers, the ones that put out fire there, the firemen and, you know, all the other workers that use ladders. And the way he played on the words afterwards, he took that ladder and, you know, it was upside down. So he descended into low society, but in reality, it was high society. And and the last final stanza was really cool, to find myself a social climber, rising downward into modesty, honesty. Yeah, it was really cleverly written, and you know, I found it a bit humorous too. So,
oh, absolutely,
clever, right? Yeah, I had a chuckle. So, very clever and witty.
Oh yeah, there definitely was some great wit and a little touch of humor, especially in those end lines. And I like that you brought up the fact that the ladder is a representation of the blue collar worker, the people that are to me oftentimes the backbone of a society. So
mm-hmm.
Great observation there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Okay, it's a bent differential, a parable of sorts. Be careful of what you wish for, because what you find within that which you're striving to attain is that it's not the realm you want to be in. So the thought of the ladder being what you strive to climb up, you end up stepping back down to where you were in the first place, much happier in that resolve.
I like that. I like that. And you're right. It does have that whole, thought of a parable with the lesson, you know, be careful of what you wish for. So really great observation there. And, Jean, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I did until the last line, and then I was tripping all over it. But I thought it was a nice
modesty, honesty. That was a tongue twister.
I just couldn't get it right. I'm like, what? But I thought it was nicely penned. I thought it was a great take on the prompt. And I thought it was a clever thought, you know, and descended into low society, which is high society, to find myself a social climber, rising downward into modesty and honesty. I thought that was just a clever thought to that, because so many times people think they really have to climb that ladder up, you know, to be into some social place that, you know, really may not be all it's cracked up to be. Sometimes the honesty and all that is really not up there. Because I think the higher you climb sometimes, the more of that gets lost. pardon me for saying so out loud. And I think that it was just a clever take and very well done. So nice work, Ken. Appreciate
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up that third stanza, because I do think, I like it all the way through, but that is a particularly important part. That actually, it makes me think of the Garth Brooks song, I got friends in low places where the whiskey flows. Yep. That's what it makes me think of. but no, I really like how this works on a metaphorical level, like with the idea of, as Rex said, you know, getting what you want and realizing that you, suddenly you're not where you thought you should be. Life isn't as good as you thought. And, I thought this was just a really well-written poem and very well done. And let's see what we got next. All right. And up next we have The Demon Drink by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a recording for that. So whenever you're ready, Jean.
Okay, here we go.
Thou demon drink, thou foul destroyer, what hast thou done to your society? Give me time to think on it, and the loss of our country's sobriety. It causes a father to neglect his child, spend each farthing on whiskey and ale. When mother finds out her displeasure is clear, she aims at his head with a labby pail. For the sake of your clan, vow to drink less, and hope you'll never hear to see through the bottom of your whiskey glass, yourself as others see you.
Wonderful read there, Weaver. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. She's got a wonderful reading voice. This had really great rhyme and flow. To me, I really like how this had a darker tone to it that really spoke on the importance of putting clan, family first. I did like how she added in some of the dialect used in Robert Burns' poetry. And great right all the way through. But I really like when Mither finds oot pleasure is clear, and for the sake of your clan. I thought that was very important, because clan, of course, to me connects with family. You know, for the sake of, if something you're doing is hurting your family, and then for their sake, perhaps consider that it's not something you should be doing. So just a really nicely done read and write. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, I got to go with that second one. That's a nice touch, a little bit of humor in there. Causes a father to neglect his child, spend each farthing on whiskey and ale. When Mither finds out, but his displeasure is clear, she aims at his ear with a labby pail. Yeah. Get hit upside the head with the familiar saying they used to have? The labby pail. It's the bedpan, so to speak. Boy,
oh,
I think you've got
to read. Oh, my goodness, yes. good point. Yeah, absolutely. Well said there. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I thought this was amazing how she used the old Scottish dialect in this. And, like you said, it has wonderful flow and rhythm. She kept that in there. And I love how she, she poses that question in the first sentence, thou demon drink, thou foul destroyer. What hast thou done to our society? Give me time to think on it and the loss of our country's sobriety. It's food for thought that there, that's stanza, you know. You're losing your the country sobriety. I love that wordplay that she put in there. And, of course, I had a little smile at seeing the head bashed in with the pail there. So she tied in a bit of humor into this too, which was brilliant. But just a brilliant write all through. So bravo, Weaver of Dreams.
Yep, I have to agree. Very well said there. And Jean, your thoughts?
I thought this was really, really well done. I think that she nailed the prompt. Of course, I had to go back and check it out, what the prompt was. But it was, what's some power the gifty give us to see ourselves as others see us. You know, she definitely met that in the poem. Because I remember hearing that it was down near the end, right there. But it was just well written. And my God, what a wonderful read. I mean, you know, it was so natural. And I loved that part of it.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, when you get something like that that just is so, just easy on the ear, easy flow. I mean, it's just great. So very well done, Weaver of Dreams. With a name like Kate McDonald, I think she should be able to read that stuff.
Right. Well, especially considering that I believe she lives in Scotland. Like she is Scottish. So yep, makes sense.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yep. And
see.
All right. And up next we have Killer Rock by Tom Boston. And Rex, I'd like you to give this a read, and Gene, when he's done reading, go ahead and kick off the comments. I'll be right back.
Sure.
All right. Killer Rock by Tom Boston. Among the granite and green on an oak tree I leaned to rest in the shade of his crown. For that moment just then, I was lord of this realm with his ruins of history renowned. And in this ancient place, I tried to retrace the footsteps of those from the past. In that reticent wood, as a young man, I stood in search of the play's ghostly cast. But none there was seen, not the prince or the queen, nor the laird among the named after the rose. And the fierce men of war did battle no more, no soldiers were railed against foes. All the colors of fall seemed to recall Plantagenets and seasons of lore. The echoes of time and the ancient bell's chime saluted a world that's no more. Now, as I left this scene where legends had been, I stole one more glance just to see if I only could glimpse that queen or that prince, or those few that fought to be free. The highland sun teased its way through the leaves and dappled the ground with its gold. And the whispering trees, with the voice of the breeze, lamented the fallen of old. And poem.
Nice read, Rex. Nice read. Naomi, you want to kick us off?
Oh, yeah. This is amazing. You know, the way he kept the rhyme and the rhythm all through and such beautiful imagery throughout. And, you know, he just told the tale of this young man to trip, like he writes in his author notes there. A young man to Killrock Castle, pronounced Killrock, Inverness, Scotland. Oh, we have an Inverness here in Quebec. We have a lot of Scottish people, immigrants from Scotland. Well, my mom is Irish, but we have a lot of people down in the Gaspé from Scotland. So we have a town called Inverness down there. I just love this write. And the last lines there, the highland sun teased its way through the leaves and dappled the sun with its gold. And the whispering trees with the voice of the breeze lamented the fallen of old. I just love that last stanza. And just an amazing, amazing write throughout. Bravo, Tom Boston.
Right. Comment, Naomi. Nice comment. Welcome back, Pam. I thought this was a great piece. I was looking at the author's notes myself, and I loved how they, I loved how Tom Boston, it was kind of a nod to the past and a nod to the stories, the history. And I thought it was very well done and nicely written. And it was a great read, Rex. Nice job. And Ms. Pam, did you happen to read this earlier?
I did read it earlier. And, yeah, this one was commented on the contest wall that he had this right. So it wasn't specifically written to one of the prompts, but I thought it fit very well in the show. And as he mentioned, mm-hmm. He was remembering a trip he took as a young man to Scotland. And so to me, this, as you were saying, Jean, and I like the fact that mm-hmm. he covered the past, and he covered the future, and it works really well as a tribute to a place that is important to him, a place that I believe that, if I remember, he said that him and his wife went here on their honeymoon, and so absolutely, and just absolutely beautiful language, use of language all the way through. But I have to say, I really like that second stanza that speaks of the bravery of the Scottish men. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
Right. Mm-hmm. Nice comments. Oh, I thought it was a great poem. I think I said that, didn't I? I did.
I think you
did.
Yes.
Rex, I think I skipped you, didn't I? Didn't you?
Yes. That's all right. It talks back to a time when things actually were ripped. There's a nice touch of a rhyme to this, the inline rhyme, and then the four-line makeups to help the flow roll along nicely. But I do like the sort of offering up the notion to remembering tidbits of the past, because a lot of these places are disappearing, and even the old Highland languages are being bled out of the new generations. They're not being taught their history or their language or what got them here to this point in time and the things in between. So it does harken back to a time that was a little bit more prouder of its heritage.
Mm-hmm.
I really like how you brought up the fact that the old Highland languages are being bled out. So really great observation and comment there. And wonderful comments, everybody. All right. And up next we have Gowns by a Brash Chief by Poetic Picasso. And we have a recording for that. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Oh, yes, and we have another call.
Area code
419. Hi, area code 419. Who's calling, please?
Hello, it's Kel.
Hi, Kel.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Hi, Kel.
Okay.
How are we doing? Join us.
Yes.
Good. How's it going with you?
It's good.
Good. All right. Whenever you're ready, Jean.
I have to find it. Where is Frank? There it is.
Okay, here we go.
The long moors bustle with a gale, bout to croft down the bonny dale. Red-winged blackburns fain and hail within the peat bog and the swale. The old county field wants to follow a bird by the clutchings that wallow. Neath the sky glittering the window, a flower, the smelt glint of a rainbow. Tune, few again the sweat rot, till the eventide have been sought, with the lonesome thistles brought, in the donnest days of the drought. With the strive beneath yawned and clever, tilling the seeds of the morrow ever, where clowns strangle and not ever, as the smirk of yore dwineth never. South in leads to the dink kimmer, with the lures that swiftly glimmer, as it gareth and greet in a shimmer, and the wooster's high, wind dimmer. Bruceling within a wain herb drake, a fairy dogger's eyed it in scape, wing there along a grushy sock, amidst the kicking and sicker hawk. Sprack dreep to that yonder field, over the glen whence lieth a build, with the eyes of reapers that wield, jiggered to the nightfalls that yield. Drudgery spread ayond the shield, long the gowans by a brash chill, thin in whim and in wrath wheel, with the coming of drows but heal. End of poem.
Great reading right there, Frank. Thank you for the recording. Very much appreciate it. Oh, I hear we still have music. Okay. Yeah, I really liked the rhyme and the flow in this, the use of the dialect, the language. I thought it worked really well, and was a great poem for tonight. And let's see, how about Kel? You're the new kid on the block. Let's start with your thoughts.
Wow, he's even got a glossary.
yeah.
This could not have been an easy poem to write. Seriously, because of all the language he uses, it's fantastic. And, you know, he's a master at language, I swear. He had to have been doing a lot of research before he wrote this to come up with all the beautiful words that are so Scottish. My goodness. It's fantastic. Absolutely beautiful writing. I have to go through the glossary and reread it, though. But, yeah, it's fantastic.
Okay.
Good job.
Absolutely. And it is nice that I like that he has the glossary in his AN, because you can appreciate it for its language use and the way it sounds, and then you can go back and read it again looking at the glossary and appreciate it more in-depthly. So just a great comment there, Kel. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, you got to start with the title, Gowan by a Brash Geo, Wildflowers by a Brash Lad. Nice touch. And got that opening thought, the Lyle Moore's Buckle with a Gale. And that second, what was the second? No, the third one. It's all about the land. Chew, again, the sweat rot. Soil, again, the sweat rot. So the evening times have been bought. With the lonesome thistles brought in the dunnest days of the draft, dunnest, darkest, dreariest. But it's a hard work in the land, sitting on those notes of hard times, hard lives, and how the strong backs of the Scots walked and lived and held themselves through who and what they were.
I like that, and you're right, and that's a really great observation there about the dedication to the land and the hardworking people. So excellent comment. And Naomi, your thoughts.
The first thing I thought of when I read this poem is, like Robert Burns, Frank has have put a woman in there somewhere. And so I schemed down the glossary. And yes, he did. There's Kimmer, which is a female companion. So
well,
she
there
did
you
that.
Go.
But but I really loved the lines, red-winged blackbird fain and hail within the peat bog and the swale. And then 'neath the sky glittering the window of flower, the small glint of a rainbow. You know, that it's beautifully worded. And wow, the research you put into this. And, you know, like Kel said, to compose a glossary and to just, and the way he read it, oh my gracious, that was such a great read, Frank. I'm just blown away. This is just amazing, amazing, amazing.
I have to agree. It was a wonderful read. Just really impressive, as I said, with the use of the language. I really like Southing Lees, Dink Kimmer, that whole line, and, you know, just all the way through. It's just a delight to listen to, a delight to read. You know, the tribute to the field and the sky and the rainbow, and the second stanza is absolutely just beautiful. So it is an excellent write and read, and very well done. And all right, let's see. When I used to write pastoral poems only. Well, I have to say, I think you have a real talent for pastoral style poems. So very well done. And up next, we have Suspicious Mind by Randy G. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes. He wrote to the quote, "Suspicion is a heavy armor, and with its weight it impedes more than it protects. I have survived these many years by my keen intuition, giving me an edge to make early aggressive decisions, advancing into battle with a confidence baldly supreme, believing my foe will fall, bringing an end to his regime. With this understanding, I followed my new suspicion that a neighboring enemy held to a nefarious ambition to make me unaware and defeat me and secure my land. But I won't be overcome by such a basic, obvious plan. So I put on my armor and called out all my mighty men, leading them into battle that we were sure we'd win. We reached our boundaries, no opposing army in sight. I was in disbelief. My neighbor had no intention to fight. Feeling humbled and ashamed, turning to the castle, my intuition failed. I'm the equal of a common vassal. On a bridge, I was bucked into the river, armor bound, but it was suspicion. Not armor caused me to drown. To take heed to these words given with humblest intent, not every indiscretion leaves a proper time to repent. Do not let an armor of pride make you feel too brave or hold any suspicion of my message from the grave." End poem. No, it's neat.
Wonderful read there, Naomi, and what a great write by Randy G. He wanted to call in, but unfortunately he's not feeling well, so we'll keep him in our thoughts and prayers and hope he feels better soon. And let's go ahead and start with you, Rex, your thoughts.
All right, hits on the word suspicious. All right, with the the thought of power as he's granting himself here with the castle, there is suspicion comes along with it. But as suspicion rolls along, as does the age, paranoia sinks in. And when paranoia sinks in, you decide that you're the one who takes the upper hand and take the battle to him rather than wait. And in your finding, there is nothing there except your own ignorance, maybe your own paranoia, and the fact that you just drug a whole castle of people out somewhere, spent a lot of money without anything in hand to show for its truth. And some things come directly to those who play by different standards, and that was him being dropped from his horse into the river to drown. It kind of reminds me of Francis Henry II, who decided he would engage in the artful combat on the field, jousting. And he did joust. It took him 2 long weeks to die from a lance that broke and pierced both of his eyes and went into his brain. So,
mm-hmm. Oh my
careful
goodness.
What you delve into.
Yes. Well, and you always have the most interesting little tidbits and of information. Like, I like learning that. But you're right. There really is this whole idea, and I'm slightly paraphrasing you, but being your own worst enemy. Or it's oftentimes like when paranoia or suspicion makes you think that something horrible is going to happen until finally it's like a self-fulfilled prophecy. That's what it made me think of it as you were commenting, is those kind of prophecies that we fulfill with our own negative thoughts or negative reactions to our thoughts. And Kel, thoughts on this poem?
Well, I've got a few. He's got really awesome rhythm and flow to it. It's really great. I also like the language he used because he tried to keep it basically to the time period. I like the storyline. It's very well done, and it's got a terrific message. So I put on my army and called out all my mighty men, leading them into battle that we were sure we'd win. We reached our boundaries, no opposing army in sight. I was in disbelief. My neighbor had no intention to fight. It's just very well done poem. I really appreciated it.
Absolutely. I liked all those thoughts that you shared, and I have to agree. And it is it does have a great message. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was amazed, like Cal just said, by the composition of all of this wonderful tale here. And I was, you know, really drawn in. I wanted to know what was going to happen. So it was very, you know, enchanting. And, you know, there's suspicion that led to his downfall. But, of course, you also see there's pride, too. You know, the proud that he was the first one to go to fight. I think a little bit of male ego in there. And, you know, to win the battle. And he was sure he was going to win. And, you know, that led all that with a suspicion that was a spark to everything. Well, led him to his downfall, which was his grave. So yeah, just a brilliant told tale here, Randy G. I just loved it.
Absolutely, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And let's see, and I think. Yeah, and then I will comment. Yeah, I really liked this all the way through. I liked that it told the story from a perspective of someone who, you know, was overly ambitious, you know, overly suspicious of people and really created their own bad luck. And I like how the first four stanzas really told the story. And the last stanza wrapped it up really nicely with the lesson that was learned. And I like how the last line adds a twist to it, the idea that this person is giving us this lesson, this tale of their own demise from beyond the grave. So excellent write and very well done. And let's see. Up next, we have, and all right. Up next, we have High and Low Roads by Eric Svensson. And we have a recording for that. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
High and low roads, no dull poetry clansman, this bonny lad, muse infused from tender age, pastoral preacher of nature's treasure chest, cleaved himself to hill, heather, and vale, down on the farm roots sprung in search of beatitudes, a wee dram of words sprung a spring, fountainhead of vowels, owls, and mirth, cleaved love's river to rush along high and low roads. Sound infusion leap joyfully across the lay of the land, hand upon a quivering breast, doe, a deer, a female deer, ray, a drop of golden sun, me, a name, I call myself, Rabbi Burns, the national bard, bard of Ayrshire, and ploughman poet, brings unbridled joy, heather, heath, and vale, trailblazers remembrance of buxom clouds, curvaceous cajole, tickle tees of stern mountain rock face, delight of such manly power, discombobulated, diluted to flute's quiver, become pan infatuated with fair maidens, drink a wee dram or two, fair lady, high and low roads traversed by a brave heart poet, colloquial cadence wrought rainbows, silver sheen of trout in highland streams, clansmen went fly fishing many a dream, bondsmen brokered a pathway for Scottish kith and kin, cockles and mussels worked down on the farm, embroidered intrigue threads a tapestry, parallel life ley lines intrigue. Scotland's farmer poet was the eldest of seven children, Southern Shores poet the youngest of seven children. Between the eldest poet of yesteryear and the youngest poet of now, heather, heath, hill, and word veils rush. Doe, a deer, a female deer, ray, a drop of golden sun, me, a name, I call myself. High and low roads, gone at 37. Head over hills rush into bonny veils of heavenly hush. A heart crushed by unbridled passion. Rest thee well, Rabbi Burns, you trailblaze remembrance, with curvaceous clouds cajole, tickle tease our stern poetic rock faces, ensconced down here. Let us remember that life is but a day at most. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Eric. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. Just a reminder, everyone, if you're not able to call in, then the next best thing is to provide a recording, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. I really like when Eric sings in the middle of a poem or like finds a spot to sing a song, because it's just absolutely delightful. I thought this was a wonderful tribute to Robert Burns, and I like how he throws in his nicknames there, like the Bard of Ayrshire and the Plowman Poet. I also like how near the end he connects Robbie Burns to his own life, both being poets, both being farmers, or, you know, coming from a family of farmers, and both having large families, as far as brothers and sisters, you know. And to me, one of the things that he covers here with his nod towards Robert Burns is the fact that he never forgot his humble roots. As famous as he became, as rich as he became, as big of a house as he moved into after he started making money, farming was always something that was important to him. Nature, the land, it was always important to him. I also like how he gives a nod towards Burns' love of the female persuasion with become tan, infatuated with fair maidens. I thought that was quite clever and witty. And then some wonderful alliteration here. Bondsman brokered a pathway to Scotsman's kith and kin. Really great lines all the way through. Clever, fun, and really, like I said, a wonderful tribute to the Bard of Ayrshire. So very well done. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
All right. Like I said, I'm the same way. It's a nice, rich tribute. He hits on a couple of things which were really good. That first stanza, about halfway down, he hits a wee dram of words sprung a spring. Nice touch to thought there. But he hits it again on the second stanza at the bottom, drink a wee dram or two, fair lady. And he hits on a little bit of tickle tease of stern mountain rock face, delight of such manly power discombobulated, diluted to a flute quiver, became pan infatuated with fair maidens. So there's a nice touch to a little humorous joy in the undertaking. And then again, he kind of hits on other things like silver sheen of trout. What else we got? And head over heels rush into bonny veils of heavenly hush. Again, little touches of sensual thought in the moment added to a ringing, because he's got curvaceous clouds cajole. So there's a lot more going on between the lines as well as what's on the lines.
I like that, very well said there. I like that you brought up the touch of humor and enjoyment within those lines, and absolutely a great comment.
And I forgot
there.
The cockles and muscles. There's another one.
Yes, I have to agree. That is another great line. All right, and Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is just a superb piece. Which sums up the life of Robert Burns, but also the way of the Scottish people, you know, that lived on the highlands. You know, he touches on the fly fishing, how they worked the farm, the embroidered threads of tapestry. And, you know, so he rounds up well, and he gives us the sense of what it was like, the life up there, he talks a lot about nature too. There's nature throughout this poem, so you just breathe in the paysage there, the paysage of Scotland in this, and the way of the people in those times. So this is just brilliantly written all the way through. It's great, right, Erica? just bravo on this piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely well said there. And before we continue on, I'd like to welcome Confess to the show. Welcome, Confess. Glad you could join us.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Confess.
And,
hey.
Yeah, good to have you here. All right, and tell your thoughts.
Well, I like the drawing to start out. I love the alliteration and the reference to the song from Sound of Music. And the way you sang it was really fantastic. The movie was filmed in Scotland, if I remember right. It's a fantastic tribute to the bard.
It truly is. It truly is.
And
yeah.
So very well done. Just wow, amazing work.
Yeah, I have to agree. And Confess, did you get a chance to hear or to read this poem?
Part of it, but I was reading as you guys were speaking, so I got a little chance to see what everyone's comment was about, and I can agree that this was really good imagery, really good word placement, and just another one of those poems that you learn a lot about from what they are writing on, especially him being Scottish, I believe, or from Scotland. So there's like a history lesson in the poem, you know. So I found that very interesting, and also in the way that he used imagery and I forgot it's another word I can't think of right now. Maybe because it's so late, but I just thought it was very beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comments, everybody. All right. And then I'll go ahead and get the next poem up. And up next, we have A Night for a That by Lockdown Lark. And Kel, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. A Night for a That, Lockdown Lark. Pipe in the gathering, celebrate his time and space. Not yet shall we sing. First recite his Selkirk grace. Now it's time to greet the guest of honor for you all. Whilst rising to your feet, bagpipes herald the arrival. First a toast to the chef's class, and then to our beloved haggis. So I'll raise your glass and give the whiskey a kiss. The next custom we must not shirk. It is the essence of this night. Call for the piper's dirk. Pierce the honor of our delight. Fill up yourselves with cockaliki. No haggis will be spared. Meats and taties accompany, followed by some tipsy laird. Entertaining recitals and more of the bard in his time, ending this night of Rabi folklore, a rousing rendition of Auld Lang Syne. End of poem.
Wonderful read there, Tell. And Confess, let's start with your thoughts first.
Yeah, I felt like some of these words here I never heard before, especially that last line. I was like, ooh, I would have had a hard time reading that last line. But it's feeling so like it takes you back to old school poetry, how they had their own language. They didn't try to assimilate to different forms of like what other poets were doing. I feel like here his what do you call that? Not the auto tune. What is it? I can't think of it. How we rank the auto rank or something? I think it's called. I'm sure his auto rank is like really high because it just has that professional
way of writing a poem, yet still in a different kind of style. I love that. I love the words. It takes you to another place, so that imagery is there. I love that it's in a four-line stanza. And I know a lot of people don't really like starting all their lines with the capitalization, but I felt like it was some emphasis here on why he did it. I could be wrong. I don't know. But or he's taking that old school approach where punctuation does matter. But I love this, and it gets me back to that same space where it's like, okay, you guys are making me want to see how Scottish poets are, because maybe that's kind of, he took a take from that as well that I'm not catching, but you can totally tell it's there, right? So that was really good, very, very different from any poetry that I typically read.
Absolutely, well said there. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, he took the prompt, life is but a day at most, or something along those lines. And, you know, he really wrote well to that prompt. He took a day of celebration, and he described their customs, you know, and the way they each ritual was carried out throughout this poem, and you know, and ended it with you know, Robert folklore from Robert Burns there at the end. So I thought this was really well laid out and well written, and just you know, a very thought out, well composed piece, and just brilliant. So bravo, lockdown Lars. I wonder if he's from Scotland.
That is a good question. He is from the United Kingdom, so that is possible.
Could be possible. Yeah, he could be Scottish.
Yep. I can't say for sure though, but he's definitely from closer to Scotland than we are, if nothing else. but that was a great comment, Naomi. And Kel, your thoughts.
Well, I love the language that has that little bit of Gaelic to it. I like the storyline. It makes you feel like you're in one of the great halls of a castle keep, and they're having a little gathering, you know, to honor Robbie. So this was really fantastically done. Just call for the Piper's Dirk Pierce, the honor of our delight. I like the reference to the different foods and stuff that they ate then. Well, and still do, if I imagine. But yeah, this was really a fantastic write. Very well done.
Absolutely. And yeah, all of these foods that he mentions in his poetry, in his poem, are all foods that are traditionally served on Burns Night, on the celebration night of Robert Burns. And so, yeah, I really liked how he gave a nod to Robert Burns, and especially where he mentioned the ending this night of Rabbi folklore, but he also gave a nod. It's a poem that celebrates the Burns dinner. I like how he puts in the little tidbits, like that you started out by first reciting the Selkirk Grace, and that he puts in there the line about the stanza of the fourth one, the next custom we must not shirk, it is the essence of this night. The piercing of the haggis. You know, I just thought that was a wonderful, it was a great write all the way through, but that was probably one of my favorites. You know, just a write that's rich in tradition and celebration. So very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's a celebration, right? And start with Selkirk Grace as the opening thought. Now, the guest of honor, you might think the old rabbi himself, but the guest of honor is the haggis that is now being wheeled in for everyone to enjoy. And that's the thought with the bagpipes herald the arrival. That's the haggis being brought in the door. And the thought using a piper's dirk was a nice touch because, hey, if you're going to go and celebrate properly, you might as well be using a dirk to make the first cut. And I do like the thought with the food. Kakaliki is a nice traditional stick pea ribs soup. And meats and tatties, that's turnips and potatoes as traditional fare shared with haggis itself. And the tipsy laird is a whiskey-laced treat for after dinner. So nicely done there, lockdown. This was good.
I have to agree. I'm glad you brought up the food. And I like how you brought up and mentioned that the guest of honor is the haggis that's being wheeled out. And I've actually made kakaliki soup. It is anyone who likes a nice comfort food and a good savory soup. It's definitely one worth trying. I have not tried it to be layered.
Come winter time, you've got to use your good sparingly, and you make a big pot of kakaliki soup, and it goes a long way, and it's quite hearty because of the leeks, the chicken, the beef, the sometimes prunes, the barley, the basil, the parsley, and everything else. It's a nice, rich soup that sits well.
It really does. Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And great comments, everybody. All right. Up next, we have A Day in Me Life, a tribute to Rabbi Burns by Diane D. And we have a recording for that. So, Gene, whenever you're ready.
A Day in Me Life, a tribute to Rabbi Burns by Diane D. It's in me to wake up pure whitey after a night all was steaming. Razzing off tonight is done, or if tomorrow gets me dreaming. My head's minced some pure done in, though the heel slap it into me. What happens at the lock stays at the lock. Which fur you'll know go by ye. Gonna tap spoon billies off thirst. It's in me to get pure blutered. I'll gee ye skillet lug, says Jean. It's in me to get you neutered. It's oot on the randon ain't night, Jean. Rabbi, gonna now do that. You're pure dead brilliant with the pen. The nurse, me head needs a slap. Always willing to pick up the pen. Rabbi, he winks at the moon. Failing means you're playing there, Jean. And he inks the banks of doom. End poem.
That was absolutely a wonderful read and write. I really enjoyed the bagpipes in the background. And really just a great use of language and, as I said, just fun to listen to. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
All right. I want to get here on the last line. Failing means you're playing with Gene and he inks the banks of Dune. There's a notable thought to how his wife would help me after get back to writing after a night out, so to speak, or having a few drams too much of the good old stuff. Let's see what she got there. She hits on I like the thought with the spoon dually. That was a nice touch. Also, what was that? I got the lock. What happens at the lock stays at the lock. The nice day kind of hit on that note of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And give ye a scalped lug, says Gene. And that's a nice touch. It's kind of a smack, a big slap upside the head, so to speak.
Yes.
And then the sort of, right after that, drops in a little bit of a pun. It's in me to get you neutered.
Well, yeah, especially considering they had 9 kids together. that was, I have to agree, a bit of fun. Yeah, that's a wonderful comment there, Rex. And Naomi, your thoughts? Naomi, are you on mute?
Mm-hmm.
Am I on mute?
Oh, sorry. I did message on the board that I'd be right back. Sorry, I didn't get the chance. My cat, I had to go feed my cat. she was meowing her head off. I'm so sorry. I'm going to read Diane back.
Oh,
and
sure,
then
no
I'll get
problem.
A comment
I'll go on to
her.
Somebody else. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, and confess your thoughts.
Yeah, I was reading the translation because I was like, ooh, okay. But yeah, this is also giving a great ode to the Scottish form of writing, and seems like it's very close to her in a way. Like maybe she's pretty Scottish too, or just familiar with that type of culture, especially with her word choices. It just seems like she has the tongue there of someone who, you know, knows the slang and everything. I just found that so interesting. But I thought it was a good rhyme here. At first you couldn't really see it, but it's a rhyme poem, and it's a very like subtle, and it still like has a good flow. So I like that as well. Yeah, that's my comment.
Absolutely. Absolutely great comment. And Kel, your thoughts.
Oh, golly, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It's fun. I love the language she uses with all the Gaelic. It's just really terrific. You know, getting... keeping Robbie at the pen. I really like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah,
keep going. Set up and write.
Yeah, that was great. Yep. And, I really liked how she went into the Gaelic dialect and into the Highlander dialect. And how she wrote with humor about the relationship between Burns and his wife, Jean. And, I really did also like that line, "It's in me pay to get you neutered." And I really also liked the use of the word spoondoolies. I thought that the whole thing was just really cool and clever all the way through and very well done. And Naomi, did you get a chance to read that?
Oh, sorry, I was away again. I'm just reading it now.
Oh, sure, no problem. All right, and I see Rex has to go. That's too bad. All right. Well, good night, Rex. Thank you for calling in. Much appreciated. All right. And up next, we have your poem, Kel. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Ode to Burn Highland. Kel smiles. The birthplace of Allure, the country of worth. Whenever I wander, wherever I roam, the hills of the Highlands, forever I love. Robert Burns. Finding sunflower yellow gorse, heathers of pink and purple, standing sparsely tall, supple, alongside the rock-side cliff, Atlantic swells spewing foam. The man in Shetland wool sleeve strides the Highlanders' moors, over and above an eagle's streak, wind chimes through the pines, evergreens in dusky forest fires. He surveys the horizons of Scotland,
with this timelessly inspired history, her boundless borders preyed upon by kings and queens of England. Freedom won through Scots pride. Centuries of Celtic and Gaelic history compromised by the English rulers. Inspiration for the lyrics of bards, including the man known as Burns, a loyal, devout, and literary Scotsman and poem.
Wonderful read and write, Kel. I really like how you wrote this as a tribute to Scotland and to its history. And so just absolutely very well done. I want to comment further, but first I'm going to get you a couple other comments. And Naomi, let's start with you. Oh, gee, she's going to be right back again. Oh, my goodness, they're all running off. Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and start with you, Confess.
Okay, yeah. So, Kels, I thought that you brought someone who maybe isn't familiar with Scotland there. Like, I felt like I was there. I could see the spiny sunflowers and that, like, field. And when you walk, you see a bunch of greenery. I see all of this. So it's, like, really great imagery here, especially you just compact that imagery in the first stanza all right away. Like, you're, like, setting the scene here. I love that. I love that. I love when people write like that. and I love also, like, this is another ode to Scotland, to this gentleman here. I don't even know whom this gentleman is, but he sounds like he was very interesting. And Scotland sounds very lovely, and, like, the plains, the terrain there is lovely. As you describe the evergreens and dusky forest briars, I'm like, I can envision that. It looks like it smells good, too. So I thought you did such a good job here, and such a lovely poem. So kudos.
Thank you, Confess.
You're welcome.
Great comment there, I thought this was just absolutely wonderful that you paid ode to Robert Burns by paying ode to his homeland, I like how, because he was very much into nature and into nature poetry, I like how you start out your poem with nature imagery, with the sunflower yellow gorse, the heathers of pink and purple. I thought that had absolutely wonderful imagery in this. I also like how you give nod to the Scots pride and then the ending stanza mentioning the history and how they were compromised by the English rulers. And all of this was inspiration for his lyrics. I really thought this was just a wonderful write all the way through, and very well done, Kel. And Naomi, welcome back.
Yeah.
You get a chance to read Kel's poem.
Yeah, I just finished. I just thought that this was wonderfully worded all throughout. Kel, an amazing poem. Wonderful imagery throughout, and you can just see Burns standing there, you know, in Shetland wool tweed on those highland moors, with the eagle shrieking there above, and the wind through the pines and the evergreens. So just a beautiful, beautiful poem throughout. Wonderful, right?
Absolutely. Well said there. And all right. Up next we have... Yep.
I just wanted to see... I just wanted to say, because I don't want to skip Diane, and I had time to read back her poem too, and I had a chuckle, and it was so delightful, her piece. So I just wanted to say that to her, because she's probably listening in, and And I left her a comment, and I'd really appreciated that, right? It was really fun.
I have to agree.
And well done.
Wonderful. Thank you. And up next, we have Homecoming by Arliss D. And Confess, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, let me go back up because everyone's chatting, so I think I just lost it. Okay, I got it. Arliss. Okay, I thought I was following Arliss. Okay, anyways. Homecoming. The prairie is alive tonight. All creatures on the Odyssey home carrying the jewels of the day on their heads and backs. The end of evening has been a long time coming now. Shadows stretch their papers and bodies into the blackening sky. I would join them, but I am still without a place to go. This land boasts little comfort for the vagabond seeking shelter from the moon, calming solace, and the nervous winds twisting through the clover and over hills, frisking me like an arrogant agent of the TSA. My flight requires no baggage. My seat is on the wing. Hold on for a bumpy ride. Nothing to eat or drink until we land in the agency. My hands are rough and dirty, scarred by hard work ions of scraping by, building shelters for others happy to move into their new abodes, cut off from their neighbors and friends. An elaborate hermitage of the soul. But who speaks of it today? Who looks into it, searching its depths, its breath, its inhalation and gloom? The prairie is on fire. I knew a man like me out of prison. After so many years, no skills to sell, nothing to buy, cut loose in the breeze of an autumn morning, free to travel. In a direction free to move and leap into traffic flow until the car stopped and he laughed into the sun and their honking like geese. He had forgotten them, making their way south to a permanent breeding ground of backbreaking work and great loss. He died, I heard, from a bullet in the brain. A robbery gone wrong, guns firing at mass, a bloody smile stuck to his face. Initiated in Anthusian mysteries, each creature practices the ritual of nothingness right large across the empty sky like lost stars. Their thoughts guide me toward a place in the prairie, the observer changing what he observes, the looter snatching food and drink from the source. Nature nurtures, we are told, but the rotting trees, the red tooth, the claw feed me with only fear of mortality, the angst of fortitude, the promise of plenitude, and its currents of the prairie carrying weary sailors home into at the cusp harbors the jewels of a lifetime in hand, in poem. Whew.
Wonderful read there, Confess. And what a great write, just really hard-hitting and powerful
yes.
by Arliss. Yes, I have to agree. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, he really spilled it all out here. You know, I love the way he took that man and he described him. You know, the man out of prison. Wow, that description right there is just amazing. You know, the way he worded that, you know, just cut loose in the breeze on an autumn morning, you know, into the traffic flow until the cars stopped. He laughed into the sun at their honking, like geese, he had forgotten them. You know, this is just brilliantly worded all throughout. Just a great piece, like Alice can write them, you know, every time. So just bravo on this.
Absolutely, I have to agree. Wonderfully said there. And Kel, your thoughts.
Oh, good golly, this is stunning work. So much, it just has so much to it. Every section, it could be a story all on its own. I really like, my favorite line has to be the very first one. The prairie is alive tonight. All creatures on the Odyssey home carrying the jewels of the day on their heads and backs. It's just really fantastic writing. I'm just not real sure what all to make of it. It's just, it's interesting and clever. But other than that, I got kind of lost in it.
But, you know, sometimes it's nice to be able to get lost in a poem, you know, and to me, I really just appreciated, you know, how there's this idea of people who have a hard life. Of to me, it's a story, an observation of people who go through difficult times, and you know, who you know, come out stronger, and that the beauty is found in how they confront and survive through a difficult life. You know, I really liked this all the way through, but I really especially liked the opening stanza and the end stanza. You know, with the initiated into the Elysium mysteries, each creature practices the ritual of nothingness writ large. To me, it's that whole idea of the spirituality that's found within nature. So really just an excellent write and very well done. And all right. Up next, we have... let me grab the next poem. All right. And, all right. And up next we have I Breathe by Jas Grahn. And I'm going to ask Naomi that when this poem is done, you kick off comments. And we do have a recording for this, so Jean, whenever you're ready.
I breathe. I see kisses sing to unspoken words, after dropping a bottle of gin and tonic, after seeing it, forming a walls with silver leaves. Winter's masterpiece. I breathe. As it is fast, a shining letter over the Atlantic, floating as a giggling butterfly to save a drowning soul from setting peace. Silver in a belt, a thousand stars. I breathe, and a ravishing face flashes in the magnetic cell, dark and half shouting, apologies to the stars, and night and day, but sorry and now. I breathe, it's haunting dark out of the window, moon sets on a silver petal, washing raven sins, born to the angel's hanged paths, shadows, put me into the center, it was giving a tune. Thank you.
Well, that was an amazing that he sent in a SoundCloud. Thank you, Jaskrin, for that SoundCloud. So appreciated. And, yeah, this is, Jaskrin can write in such a way that it's so, just has an aura of spirituality that surrounds it every time. And, you know, he has just spiritual and so beautiful every single time, you know, it's uplifting, his writing. And Cal, what did you think of this write?
Oh, golly, Jasmine did it again. She is such a beautiful poet. I breathe. Ice crystals cling to unspoken words. And just, I like the repetition of I breathe.
As I dispatch a shiny letter over the Atlantic, I breathe in your ravishing taste, glasses in the magical spell. I mean, it's just really, really beautiful, beautiful wording. You know, all in a day. You know, that was the prompt. Life is but a day at most. It's really lovely.
Yeah, indeed it is. You know, all the things that he passes through the way, in every breath throughout a day, all the things that he experiences. And confess your thoughts in the poem.
Yeah, I love it. So when he comes in, first line is his title, I breathe. Ice crystals clean to unspoken words after dropping a bottle of gin and tonic. Obsessive me performing a waltz with shrill leaves, winter's masterpiece. It gets you back into that, like when you drink, or you drink too much, you like to dance, or, you know, you start doing something that you probably wouldn't do if you weren't drinking. So it put me into that emotion, or like exhaling, being happy, being free. It's like when you breathe, you're exhaling. So it's like he's talking about all these things that he breathes in, and it seems like he breathes out as he dispatched the shining letter over the Atlantic, floating like quivering butterflies. Flies to save a drowning soul. I mean, it's just such great writing here. And, you know, he's reading all these different things in, and he's, you know, also trying to, it looks like taking out of the hauntingly dark outside the window moon served on a silver platter, washing away my sins. It's like coming to this like renewal of himself. I think that's very beautiful.
Yeah, there's a like hope weave through this, but there's also pain too, and that you see. Is Pam back yet?
I am. Thank you, Naomi.
Yeah,
and thank you very much to Jas Grand for writing for the show and the contest. I'm really glad he was inspired. All right, and up next, we have Some Unions Are Meant to Be Broken by S. Sharp. And it goes like this. To the tip of Mount Kilimanjaro, where even the trees gasp for their breath at the beauty that they see, to the winding riparian paradise of the Nile, where warm breezes blow like saluting trumpets to the applauding grasslands, waving and celebrating another day, and to the depths of Lake Baikal, where the deepest deeps hide the soul of nature in peaceful communion with itself, or along the powerful ocean currents like blood flowing, carrying life to all shores, all parts of the body of the earth, where God said, let man have dominion, and man was given dominion over all things. And the beauty of the world was pleasurable, and stakes were driven into the soil to homestead, to cultivate life and dream. But nature was hard, like sun-touched soils, and so man plowed it, put it in rows, seeding the future, organized by Jethro Tull, splitting modern times from days of old, and man proliferated, conquered nature, but winter stung and angry cold. But that tree of knowledge forever grows, matures, and Eli Whitney's cotton gin kept close on man's back so he could surmount nature yet once again. Soon man tore up the stakes and great cities were built that like ambitions began to reach for the skies, and factories and ingenuity tamed nature, controlled it, contained it like an animal in the zoo of life. Something to be visited and pointed to, proudly owned. Man became the inventor, creator of engine and light, traveling faster than sound, paving everything, mining all that nature had in her. She was simply a servant, a disposable courtesan. As man smoked his cigar, so did his factories, his engines smoke and produce an atmosphere. For no one, no marriage made in nature betrayed, turned her back on man, annulled their marriage in a spiteful rage, and nature put on an angry display. Change rising, melting of the status quo, cold tears deposited in the molten snow, in the warm heart of the ocean that pools the flow, rising waters onto the lands they go, raging wildfires, drought deserts, solutions forgo, as hurricane storms of the century now yearly grow in intensity, propensity, change, rising destruction of all that we know. End quote. And he wrote to prompt 10, which was, I am truly sorry, man's dominion has broken nature's social union. And I have to say that I think this is, just absolutely a powerful right. I like how he touches on that we were supposed to have a balance, a unity, a sense of respect and care for nature. And because, it's shown as, like, metaphorically as a relationship, a marriage, where the two were supposed to take care of each other, but because mankind didn't hold up their end, nature could not hold up hers. And so just absolutely a stunning rite, a great take on the chosen prompt, and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, he lays it all out in this rite, you know, the way the greed of man has taken over, and, you know, because we like money so much, you know, we destroyed this earth. And I love how he writes in some parts of it like a scripture from the Bible, and man was given dominion over all things, and the beauty of the world was pleasurable, and stakes were given into the soil to homestead, to cultivate life and dream. It's like a scripture from the Bible, you know, the way it's written, you know, the flow of it. So it's just, you know, just something I noticed that I found was amazing. Just an amazing right here, Mr. Sharp. Just another one of your amazing, amazing, brilliant rights, and so appreciated.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Very well said. And confess your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm right there with Naomi. It's another one of those poems you have to, like, whew, you know, take a breath and really take it in of what he's describing, what he's saying, the metaphors that he's using, the imagery that he's providing us, the word choices that he used. And it's like everything was precisely planned in this poem. Like, you can tell this poem, he put some love into this poem. It's like one of those poems that you sit and then you take a breath and say, okay, now what else do I want to say here? That's what I feel like, because every stanza is like building up to the very end here, and it's a great climax to where he gets to when he's saying change, rising, destruction, all that we know. It's like everything that he started from, you know, speaking about Mount Kilimanjaro and, you know, how I think that's one of the biggest mountains, to kind of coming down that mountain, I think, like getting us up there and then bringing us down to this climax. Usually the climax goes up, but I feel like here we fail or something. I don't know, but it's supposed to, I don't know. I think I'm probably just saying this in my head, and I just said it out loud, but that's what I feel. Because he starts going down into the lands and the raging wildfires, and then maybe he's just talking about destruction, and that's where it's happening. You know, it goes from this lovely, like, and it's like, bam. And that's how I feel like that's what I feel like he did to us here. It was so emotional, I feel, as in reading it. it was very emotional, right? But I also think that he took on that prompt in a, such a different way. You would not know that he got this from that prompt. It just sounds like something that he was, you know, a vision or saw or imagined here. And it probably is because he got it from the prompt, but it's just such a magical thing when something can inspire you to write like this. Like, it's just, this is beautiful and genius, I feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And I like that you brought up the part about the destruction and the failure. That was, I like that you used the word failure, like mentioning the failure of mankind to take care of nature. So excellent comment there. All right. And our last poem for the night is going to be Spite Dark of Days Gone By by Richard Wiseman and Pam H. We do have a recording for that. So, Jean, whenever you're ready. Jean?
Spite Dark of Days Gone By by Richard Wiseman. Sung by Richard Wiseman and Pamela Nations Wiseman.
Mm-hmm.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Nay, I sing, embrace them all, spite dark of days gone by. Spite dark of days gone by, my love. Spite dark of times gone by, will birth our cup, oh kindness still, spite dark of days gone by. And sure your lips breathe truth, my love, as surely I spoke mine. Yes, we'll share this cup, O kindness, yet spite dark of days gone by. Spite dark of days gone by, my love, spite dark of times gone by. We'll birth our cup, O kindness, still spite dark of days gone by. Did we to run through breadth of hills and pull at strangling weeds? Yes, we wandered life's long weary miles, spite dark of days gone by. Spite dark of days gone by, my love. Spite dark of times gone by. We'll birth our cup, oh kindness still. Spite dark of days gone by. We too did muscle through cold stream, from morn's weak sun until we dined. Though green churn of tempest tween us roared, spite prayers to Mary's line. Spite dark of days gone by, my love, spite dark of times gone by. We'll birth our cup, oh kindness still, spite dark of days gone by. And here's upon my trusty fear, and give that hand of thine. Yea, we'll drink to hail with dark rich stout, for auld lang syne.
wonderful singing there, Pam and Richard. I really appreciated this. And, you know, I wanted to end with this one because it's traditional for a Burns night to end with a singing of Auld Lang Syne. And since this poem was a tribute to that, a homage to that song, I thought it was the perfect one to end the night on. And this has been a wonderful night. I have to say thank you to Naomi and Jean for being wonderful co-hosts. Thank you to Rex and Confess and Kel for calling in. You are all greatly appreciated. We do have some carryovers that will go on a different show, and I'll let people know where when I know. You know, thank you to Robbie and other people who hung out on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And Jean, did you have anything you'd like to say?
Just a wonderful topic, Pam. Great job. Thanks, everybody who called in. Thanks, everybody who held the board. Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Rex. Thanks, Naomi.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Have a wonderful night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Wonderful show, Pam.
Yes, wonderful poems.